Okay. Apparently we don't have printed Mar Makomos out of a concern of contagion, so you'll bear with me. Parashas Kisisa, Parsha begins with the myth of Matzah Sashekel. The Torah tells us, that through giving the Matzah Sashekel, we would avoid any possible plague. So just as Chazal tells Megillah Daf Yud Gimel, that in the schus of the Matzah Sashekel that Klai Yisrael gave, they were saved from the Gzeir of Haman. So in the schus of the Matzah Sashekel, we should be saved from any ongoing magefas. One of the shailas that the current magefa will be raising, if it hasn't raised yet, Rabbi Willie told me today that he got his first such shaila today, has to do with abrogation of contracts, rental contracts, employment contracts, because of matters associated with the coronavirus. Someone rented a wedding hall, and then the wedding is called off, or the wedding is downsized. Someone hired a band, hired some kind of contractor. Someone booked a hotel, travel plans, rented a vacation apartment. All those situations, what right does a person have to back out without having to pay? Is he entitled to reimbursement? So what I anticipate is spending 2 weeks discussing that. Tonight we'll focus on rental agreements, and next week on employment agreements. So this all begins with a sugya in Bav Metzia, two Mishnayos, Kuf Gimel Amud Beis and Kuf Hei Amud Beis. The Mishnayos, more explicitly on Kuf Hei Amud Beis, discuss the notion of Makas Medina, of a unanticipated situation that affects a large number of people in the relative area that we're discussing, that could have an effect on a person's contractual obligation. So the Mishnah tells us on Kuf Hei Amud Beis, HaMekabel Sada Mechaveiro, a person enters into a kablonis agreement, a sharecropping agreement, where he's working in someone else's field, V'achol Chagav, and it was consumed by grasshoppers, Onishtafa, or it was flooded, and then he's not able to do the work that he was contracted to do, and it can't hold his end of the bargain with the sharecropping arrangement. So in Makas Medina, if that is a Makas Medina, Menakala Min Chakura, then you can deduct from the arrangement. Meina Makas Medina, e Menakala Min Chibura. So Gemara says, what's Makas Medina? Amar Rav Yehuda could go into Ishtaf Ruba Debaga, the majority of the fields in that area were flooded. It wasn't just his field. If it's his field, then you say, Mazagarim, that's his bad luck. But if all the fields in the neighborhood, the majority of the fields are flooded, so that's a national, citywide catastrophe, so then you don't bear responsibility for not being able to hold up your end of the bargain. And Ula Amar Kagon Shinishtadfu Arba Sadas Me'abru Chosa, where there are four fields in four directions. Okay, so whatever the details are, we're talking about something that has a broad effect in the area of concern. So this comes up in Shulchan Aruch in a number of contexts. Kosha Mishpat Simin Shin Kaf Beis Sif Aleph, related to that kind of a kablanus, or chakiris rather, deal. Hachocher O Hasocher Sadam Echaveiro, a person either has a sharecropping agreement or he rents a field, V'achloch Gagav Anishtafa, and it was consumed by bugs or it got flooded. In the Ira Davrzel Rov Hasado Shel Osa Ir, if this happens to the majority of fields, Menachol HaMechakir, then you have the right to deduct that from the sharecropping arrangement. Hakol Lefi Hasid Sheir, everything based on the specific Hasid there. That's Shinkaf Beis. Then you have in Shinkaf Aleph as well. That's the Mishnah Kuf Gimel. The Yavish Mayim Beis Hashlachan, it dries up. So if it's a Makas Medina, again, you have the right to renegotiate your contract because of the Makas Medina. And then, closer to home, or closer to situations that are more relevant in our day, Shin Yud Beis Sif Yud Zayin, the Ramah says, here we're talking about Schiris Batim, renting real estate. Nisraf Habayis, so the whole discussion here in the Siman is if you rented a house, something happened to the house, what's the responsibility of the person renting it out to reimburse, to provide an alternative arrangement? So the Ramah ends this very long Sif Yud Zayin, Nisraf Habayis Dino Kanafal, that if a house burns down, it's like a house fell down, in which case, under certain circumstances, it has to be reimbursed. Nisraf Kol Ha'ir, however, if all the houses in town burn down, Havi Makas Medina, so that's a Makas Medina. A Menakala Minsky Russo, Mashalodar, Bo, Bain Hikdom Laskarla. Then you have the right to deduct from your rental payment Kinega, the days that you're unable to inhabit it because it was burnt down, whether or not you prepaid or not. And then Shin Lamed Aleph, the Ramad discusses this in the context of Skiras Polim, which we will leave for a later date. So what are examples that Poskim discuss of Makif Medina? The Gemara's example is limited to a case where you have a field, and the field was flooded, or the field was eaten up by grasshoppers. But what are more practical cases of Makif Medina? So Tshuvas Maimonios Mishpatim Simen Kavzayin. Tshuvas Maimonios Simen Kavzayin talks about a case that the Ramah references over here, Nisif Ha'ir. You have a city where the whole city burns down, a large part of the city burns down. That's one example of Makif Medina. Machan Ephraim Schira Simen Vav, which we'll get to, discusses a situation where you have a city that is raided by non-Jews who take over a large number of houses in town and kick the Jewish inhabitants out. That's another case of Makif Medina. Shuvas Ravan Simen Sadiches talks about a case where you rented a house for a couple of years, and at some point in the middle of that rental period, all the Jews are forced to flee and seek refuge elsewhere. So the Ravan doesn't say why they fled, but in the Machan Ephraim Simen Zayi, when he quotes this Ravan, I don't know if he had a gear for the Ravan that said this, or he's just projecting on the Ravan, but he says the case was where there's a Magefa, and Evan had to leave town because of some epidemic, if not pandemic. And then you have a Shubas Rebelli Mizrahi and other sources, Simen Kaf Beis, to talk about a situation of war as being a Makif Medina as well. The Ramah has an important caveat in Simen Shin Kaf Aleph, Se'if Aleph. The Ramah, based on a Shubas Maran Padua Simen Lamed Tes, that he quotes in the Darkei Moshe. There, the case of the Maran Padua was a person who had a contractual arrangement to lend money beribis. That was a major source of sustenance for Jews in the medieval period. They were money lenders, and the person had a deal whereby he was allowed to lend that money with interest to the local non-Jewish population, and then the government restricted his ability to lend out with interest. There were two possible interest lending arrangements, one of them with collateral, one of them without collateral, and the government restricted his ability to lend out money without collateral, and that that impinged on his ability to make a parnas. However, he didn't throw in the towel right away. He didn't say, I want my my money back from whatever I paid to have this monopoly in town. He tried to do shtadlonis and work something out with the government for a number of months until he finally gave up. So the Maran Padua says, and the Ramah quotes, that since it wasn't a case where it was a clear situation that he couldn't make money, he had to put in effort, and with effort it was possible that he would be able to get back the parnassus. So wherever you can be misakin, aide torach v'tachbulos, by effort and tricks and figuring out a way around the impediment, then you don't have the right to claim an exemption of Makas Medina. So Makas Medina has come up in the recent literature mostly in the following context, both in the aftermath or during the Second Lebanon War in, I believe it was 2006, when a lot of Israelis, that was the middle of summer, a lot of Israelis had made vacation plans to the north and had to cancel those vacation plans because of the war and all the katyushkas that were falling in the Galil. So there are many situations in which people had sechsuchim about getting reimbursed for money that they laid out for vacation plans that were did not come to fruition. And then in the various Gaza operations, and as well in recent years, people had to cancel weddings in Ashdod and in the south, and situations of reimbursement there as well. So there is one, Rabbi Ratzon Arusi has his annual Dayanim conference in Eretz Yisrael, where the proceedings of which are printed in this volume, Shari Tzedek. So 1 year after the Second Lebanon War, they devoted the conference to related topics of Chiyuvei Nezikin B'Shas Melchamah. So Zalman Nechemia gave a presentation, which it seems that Zalman Nechemia, most of the articles here are written by the authors, by the presenters, but sometimes you have prominent people who don't have the time to write it themselves, so they just like copy whatever they said at the conference, and it doesn't come out as well as if they wrote it themselves. So I suspect that this presentation was on Nehemiah was transcribed, because it doesn't all flow like a written piece. But he raises the following question. He addressed this issue of people who had rented vacation homes in the north, and then the war broke out. Do they have to pay the rental fees? Is there a difference between where they prepaid and are asking for a refund of their prepayment and where they didn't pay at all? So he just points out that you have to ask yourself the question as a starting point, why is there an exemption? Why is there a din of Makas Medina? Makas Medina comes up in the context of Chakiris, in the context of Schiris, in the context of rentals. No one would ever claim that you have an exemption or a carve-out of Makas Medina when it comes to sale. If I buy a house, I can't ask for my money back on the house 2 years later if a war breaks out and I can't live in the house. So what's the difference between a sale and a rental that I can claim Makas Medina when it comes to rental, but no one would ever say you can claim Makas Medina when it comes to a sale? So Zam Nechemia just points out that there's a fundamental difference between how Halacha conceptualizes a sale as opposed to rental. When it comes to a sale, you own the object. This is now yours. Even if you have a kinyan peyros, is that a kinyan aguf, dekala peyrosav, so I have the right to the fruit from this tree. I don't own the tree, but I own whatever fruit the tree produces. So that's a partial kinyan, but that's a full kinyan as far as dekala peyrosav. But when I rent something, all I'm doing is having a right to the hishtamshus, but I don't have any ownership in that property. That's reflected by the fact, even if it's based on exeris akasiv, but reflected by the fact that in principle the din is ein skivis mishalemis el basof, that you only pay a rental fee at the end of the term of rental. Now there may be situations in which we pay earlier, either because of local custom or din of the machusa or whatever the case may be, but in principle in halachas ein skivis mishalemis el basof lahalacha. So that reflects this point that before I use it, I don't owe anything for anything because I haven't availed myself of any benefit from that rental. I haven't done anything. Only the payment is for the shtamshus. So till I mishtamish, there's nothing to pay for. So because the payment is for the shtamshus and I don't end up being mishtamish, so then it makes sense that I could have an exemption of Makas Medina that I don't have to pay. Then he raises a question which he doesn't fully develop, and we'll get to this through other sources in a moment. Is there a difference between where I pay up front and I pay later? Maybe if I pay up front, then that's a different kind of schiras, even if I don't have to pay up front. If I did, maybe that changes the equation. So that will flesh out as we go on. The Machan Ephraim in Simen Zayin quotes a Chubas Ravan Simen Sadiches, who talks about this very issue of Skiris Batim, the way the Ravan presents it, Bisman Magefa. So he quotes as follows, that in that situation where a person rented a house during the time of a plague, Ein Tzarich Lahasir Maskir Kol Skiris Shelakach. The person renting the property out does not have to return the money that he took in. But for whatever time the people had to run away from town, they split the loss. In a classic case of Makas Medina, so the owner owns the field, and his field was destroyed, so it's his loss. In the case of the Makas Medina, both the rentor and the renter are equally affected. Al habatim lios nedudim. So the effect of the magefa is that the houses are desolate. Valanushim lios golem, and the residents are in exile. So it affects both the person renting the house who's not there anymore, and the owner of the house who has a house that's not usable. So the Ravan says essentially you split the difference, you split the loss. And then he quotes the Yerushalmi in Gittin, Perek Vav, Halacha Vav, that the Ramban quotes, the Rashba, sorry, quotes in Gittin, and Daf Ayin Tes Amud Aleph, that in a situation where you prepaid, you pay for the Skiris ahead of time, so then you don't have to pay that Skiris back at all. Why is that? So the Yerushalmi talks about a case of someone who rented a boat, and he rented a boat to ferry him across the river, and then the river dried up, so there's no need for the ferry service anymore. So Rav Nachman Paskin and the Rishami there, that even though there's no need for the ferry service, and even though you could have argued that's a Makas Medina because the lack of water affected the whole town, it wasn't just this guy, But the owner of the boat can say, I still have my boat. I'm happy to service you. You pay for the rental fee for the boat. Here's the boat. The boat's still here. So in that case, if he had already prepaid, Rav Nachman said, he doesn't have to give back the money. Explains the Machane Ephraim, that's different than the case where the whole city was burned down. In the case of the Hagot Jewish Maimonides, where the whole city was burned down, and you prepay, then you'd have to pay back the money, because there, the person, the owner of the house, can't provide the service. I rented you a house, it burned down, so the house isn't there anymore, so you can't argue that the house is at your service. But when it comes to the boat, so you don't need the boat anymore because the river dried up, but the boat's still there. So Machane Ephraim says, that's what the Yushami is telling us, that if the boat is still there, so then you have the right to be paid for the schiris. And that's the psak of the Maram Mitikdin, quoted in the Shach, Simon Shin Lamedalus of Katan Gimel, Shach Simon Shin Lamedalus of Katan Gimel, that if you rented a house in a city, and then there's a plague in the city and people have to run away, the socher still has to pay the balabas. Because you can say, Rachel Chalfenecha, the house is still here. No one's around because of the Magefa, but I rented you a house, the house is still here. That's not a Makas Medina. Makas Medina is, the field was destroyed, the house is burned down. But here the house is, Rachel Chalfenecha, it's here, you're welcome to live there, you don't want to because of the plague. That's your problem. But as far as the Skiris arrangement, that's still in place. That's how the Machane Ephraim understands this position, that if the Magefa, the Maka, doesn't affect Be'etzem, that object which is the subject of the Skiris, so then the Skiris still is in place. Rav Asher, Shuvas Minchas Asher, Chele Besim and Kuf Kaf, quotes a variant understanding of this Maram Mitikdin, from the Shuvas Chinuch Beis Yehuda, that when it comes to Maka Stever, so then you don't have to run away. Most people would choose to leave the town if there's a Magef in the town. But some people, for whatever consideration, may decide to stay. So it's not that fundamentally the house is uninhabitable. The house is usable. Most people would choose not to live there. But the house is usable, it's there. And then you can claim that you're owed the schiris. The Ksos says something similar in Simen Shin Kaf Bei Sivkatan Aleph. He quotes the Shuvas Maram, which is referenced in that Shach that we just quoted. Shuvas Maram Simen Shin Pei Ches. Din al Reuven Shasachar Bayis Mishimon L'Shnei Shanim. So Reuven rented a house for 2 years. V'hiktim V'nasan Lo Askar Shal Shnei Shanim, and he prepaid. And then during that time, there's a Pikuach Nefesh situation, and the Jews had to leave town. And the house is abandoned. So now Reuven wants Shimon to pay him for the time that the house is abandoned. Says Maram, at first glance, Reuven's correct. That is a Makas Medina, but you should split the difference. So you should pay him half. So why is it there? The Maram says you pay half. And in the case of the field, where there's a Mak in most of the fields, you don't pay anything, even if you prepay the Skiras. It says it's us. Hasam amaka by nashim below bevatim. That in the case of the field, so the owners of the field were affected. Here, sorry, in the case of the magefa, the owners were affected, but the houses weren't affected. And since some people were still living in town, fundamentally the house is still inhabitable, as opposed to the field, where the field was totally destroyed. Okay. I'm just looking at the clock. If I go 10 minutes over, how many people can stay? Okay, so I may go. I reserve the right to go 10 minutes over, and then whoever needs to leave, please leave. I just want to try to get through this somewhat properly. Okay. Now, this also. Shuvas Meisha Mishpat, Rav Avadya Yosef Toledano, grandson of Rav Avadya, someone I'm in touch with. So he has a tshuva in the end of Chelak Aleph of Meisha Mishpat. The particular situation he was addressing is a wedding that was supposed to take place in Ashdod in the middle of Operation Cast Iron, whatever the God's operation was, and then they had to cancel. So the wedding wanted to be reimbursed. The wedding hall wanted to be reimbursed for whatever was paid up front. So he points out that this, at first glance, the Taz seems to be against this Maran B'Tiktin and all the Achronim that we quoted until now. The Taz Shin Lamed Aleph Sifkatan Aleph writes that if you rent a house and there's a Shinoi Avir or some kind of Magefa, plague, where people have to run away, that's considered Makas HaMedina. So apparently you don't say Haresha Chalafanecha, even if the reason you're running away is because of a disease. So if Lamaisa people aren't staying in town, you don't say Haresha Chalafanecha. And that's the position of the Shach as well, Sivkatan Gimel, who quotes this Maram Tikhtin, and he disagrees on the basis of a Chuvas Maram, the Chuvas Maram we just quoted that the Xos had over here. And Rav Asher quotes the Meir Arik, who also disagrees with this approach of the Machon Ephraim, the Reisha Chalafanach approach, and says that he considers that Tamua. Now, Rav Yosef Toledano does say it's not necessarily Muchach in the Taz. When the Taz writes that if you rented a house in a place where there's a plague, that's considered Makas Medina, so maybe he's talking about a case where it's impossible to live there. In a case where some people could live there, like the Xos is talking about, so maybe then that's not a Makas Medina, because that's your discretion. If Mamish, no one can live there, so that's the case where everyone would agree it's considered to be a Makas Medina. So he says, Shas B'chama, that may be the case also. Maybe he'll argue. Rav Asher says this as well. Rabbi Toledano learned in Rav Asher's kol and sits on his bezdin. So he says as well, in Shas B'chama, so maybe, you could argue some people are going to stay there, but Lemaisa, every house is susceptible to being bombed. So maybe that's a situation where really no one would want to stay, even if theoretically some people may be staying behind. So what's the bottom line? There seems to be Machlokas HaPoskim in a case where you have Schiris Batim, B'Shas Melchama, B'Shas Magefa. The house is still standing, but most people are leaving town. Is that considered Makas Medina? So the Shach and the Pashis and the Taz seem to assume that that's still considered Makas Medina, and the Machon Ephraim, the Maram Tikhtin, and the Shach assume that. So what do we say, Lemaisa? The Sefer Emek HaMishpat, Rabbi Yaakov Kohn, five-volume contemporary Sefer Ananyane Choshe Mishpat, the volume on Skira Siman Nun, so he writes that when it came to the Second Lebanon War, where people had rented these rental places in the north, so he passed in this follows, that if they didn't pay up front, so then it's reasonable that that's considered to be a Makas Medina. There's an umdana that no one would have rented a facility under those circumstances. But if you did pay, so then it's hard to get the money back, because the master can at least say, Kimli, like the Machon Ephraim, or Kimli, that like those Chitos, that this isn't considered Makas Medina because the house is still standing. He suggests that maybe it's a good idea to do a pshara, that even if in principle you're inclined in one direction, that the master and the socher should come to some kind of a pshara. He does suggest that maybe when we're talking about a short-term rental, it's worse than a regular residence, because you could argue if a person has a long-term residence, so then a person's not going to leave home so easily, even if you're in the middle of a war. But no one will, lechachila, rent a summer home for a week in a place that's a war zone. So then maybe you could argue that no one in their right mind would stay under those circumstances. Rabbi Toledano is noted to the approach of the Machon Ephraim that you could say Haresh al Chalfanach anytime the house is standing, even Bishas Melchama, unless everyone mamish has to run away and there's no possibility of anyone staying. So in that case, if there's no possibility of anyone staying, if you pay the money up front, so then you can say, the master can say, Kimli, like the Machon Ephraim. And not, so then, if not, then we go back to calling that a Makas Medina. And Rav Asher assumes that, well, Lacha, we go with the basics, that the Shach and the Taz are on the same page, you follow the Shach and the Taz. that even if the house is standing, you don't say Reshel Chol Fanach. If it's a Makas Medina, most people are running away. So then that's considered a Makas Medina, and the Hesed is on the Masker. And he goes in the other direction. He says, even if the person did pay up front, you don't say Kimli like the Machan Ephraim, because he thinks the Machan Ephraim is a Shita Dechuya, and the Pasha says that this is considered Makas Medina across the board, and even if you pay the money, you have the right to demand it back. And he says, don't tell me that in the case of the rental houses in the north, it's not a Makas Medina, because there are plenty of permanent residents of the northern towns that stay there and rode out the war. Because that's different. If you live and if you're living there, you have nowhere to go, so then you're going to stay. But no one from the outside is coming into the middle of a war zone to take a vacation there. So as far as our contemporary situation, which we daven should end quickly. So preliminarily, without having, I was talking to Rabbi Willie briefly today, and he said we really have to start working these things out, because it hasn't been properly thought out yet, so these are just initial observations, but based on the presentation we made just now, it would seem that if we're talking about renting a vacation home, or a wedding hall, or a hotel room, or something of that sort, and you have to cancel it because if the hotel's going to cancel on you, that's not our topic. The hotel is willing to host you, but there's if there's some governmental decree or policy that would prevent you from going to that destination, so then it would seem pretty clear that the hefset is on the masker, because these are totally circumstances beyond your control. It's not up to your discretion at all. And basically, no one can get there. It's not just that if I don't go, someone else will take the room. If you're not allowed to travel to that area, so then no one could go. According to the Ravan, maybe you'd say you'd still split the difference, unless you assume like the Machan Ephraim, that if you paid up front, so then you could keep the master could keep the upfront payment. Or let's say you rented a facility in a place that you can't get to because of travel restrictions. So if someone is there locally, they could go, but you can't get there because there are no flights being allowed into that country. Or you rent a place in Eretz Yisrael and you can't get in. So there, it's arguable that that would be dependent on this machlok, the Maram Tiktin and the Shach Nataz, the Machan Ephraim Shach Nataz, that if you assume, if the house is still there, Reishel Chalafanecha, even if there is a practical miniya to get there, but there are other people who could get there, so then that would depend on that machlok, because again, Rav Asher seems convinced that we go to the Shach Nataz, that it's a classic case of Makas Medina, and others may argue. If you're not following through on your reservation because of a concern of contagion, so then you probably have to evaluate how reasonable a concern is that. So if most people in that situation are not traveling, not going anywhere, not attending mass gatherings, even if it's technically permitted, and not going to a hotel because of fears of contagion, so again, we probably go back to that same machlokes. The hotel room is available, they're willing to host you, but so do you say Reishel Chol Fanecha, or do we go back to the Shach Nataz? I know that's considered Makas Medina. Most people in that situation would not travel to such a place or rent such a facility. So that's all where the rental agreement was entered into. The person rented the facility, rented the hall before any of this broke. But now you're standing today and you're planning a simcha for 2 months from now, you're planning a vacation for the summer, so you know what's going on. It's a lot harder to argue if you're going to enter into a regular contract that there's an umdana that you could back out because you know what you're getting into. So it's probably advisable that under these circumstances, anyone entering into such a contract with a hotel, with a facility, with a hall, should have a proper clause that allows for backing out should the circumstances warrant. I was talking to Rabbi Willow today about drafting such a clause. But you have this notion, the attorneys will confirm, of force majeure, where you have a clause that has this carve-out for acts of God or situations that you wouldn't necessarily expect, and you can't fulfill your contractual arrangements. And there seems to be a discussion as to what the default is if you don't have such a clause, what's considered reasonable. But Eitz HaTova, if anyone is entering into such a contract now going forward, they should probably have such a clause. Okay, Yiratzon that we should all be saved and healed, and the Klal Yisrael should have refuah v'yishuos. And maybe next time we'll talk about the effect of such Makas Medina situations on Sechiras Poland.